Wednesday, let's pack a suitcase or maybe just a carry-on bag. I don't want to be dinged for an extra $25. A little lap around the Pacific Division with our buddy Jonathan Davis of SiriusXM NHL Network Radio based out of L.A. Mr. Davis, it has been far too long. I assume summer has treated you brilliantly.
Mr. Pinder, it has been way too long. But yes, it's been a great summer. It's still summer weather here in SoCal. And let's drop the puck and play some real games.
Now, we've had the prospect games. So those are we're simulating real games with lesser talent. It certainly is lovely compared to months and months of no hockey, but you're right. We're not far from the real thing, never mind the substitute. What have some of the biggest storylines from your neck of the woods been of late? Certainly this Andre Kasha potentially getting moved for Justin Falk would be front and center from my perspective. How keen are the Ducks on getting this done, and do you think they're willing to give the extension to Falk that would get him to waive that no-trade clause?
I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, there's no question that Bob Murray is looking for help on the back end. I mean, this was a team that, you know, for a number of years had a plethora of D-men, but, you know, over the last couple of seasons, they've moved out half their back end. I mean, you know, Sammy Vatanen, Shea Theodore, Brandon Montour, all in different area codes. And so once you get past Cam Fowler and Hampus Lindholm, and Josh Manson, it gets a little thin right now. And, yeah, the addition of a guy like Justin Falk would be a huge boost to the back end. It would be a huge boost to the power play. I mean, Ryan, he had 6 power play goals last year. It may not sound like a lot. The Ducks D combined had 2 last year.
Well, you've done a good job of relatively making it sound like a lot. So, yeah, it's the first thing I look at when I see that roster is they need a top four defenseman. The question that I've been getting asked a lot is, well, A, is Kasha too steep a price to pay for said defenseman? And B, is this team in a window where they should be trying to compete for a playoff spot versus, you know, having another year like last year where they get to pick in the top, you know, 8 to 10?
Well, you know, I think the idea of moving a guy like Andre Kasha, there are a couple of reasons for it. You know, one is that there are a lot of forwards, you know, up and coming on this roster. And while a guy like Kasha can play up and down your lineup, you know, he's had to deal with some injuries. And maybe that's a concern for Anaheim, and maybe it makes him a little more expendable than someone else, because, you know, you're looking at, you know, you already got Raquel and Silverberg. You know, those are two of the big guys carrying you forward. And then you're looking at names like Troy Terry and Sam Steele and Max Jones and Maxime Comtois, all guys that have the potential to play in your top six. So something's got to give, you know, eventually. And while the Ducks' time is not now, you know, That is a place for them of some strength to move. And so I think that that's why you're hearing the name of Andre Kasha. And if you want a top four defenseman, well, you know, I think Andre Kasha is replaceable, bottom line.
Yeah. No, and I would say for a lot of organizations, he wouldn't be. You'll dump him in an Edmonton lineup and you're like, wow, what a piece. But with that wave of forwards in the system, Terry, Richie, Steele, Comtois, Jones, I understand why that might be, you know, playing from a position of strength to address a weakness. That would make sense to me. Tell me about the new the rookie tournament you took in and the new facility that Anaheim now has. This apparently is a big deal in the LA area, and for the Ducks, a bit of a coup here.
Well, I think it's the envy of many from, you know, talking to, you know, to various scouts and GMs that were down there. I mean, you know, we had 6 teams down there: Arizona, Colorado, Las Vegas, San Jose, and then Anaheim and LA. I mean, it is a 4-sheet facility. There is space to even add more sheets down there. It's a 280,000 square foot facility, 4 rinks. The largest rink holds 2,500 people. It was sold out for the LA-Anaheim game, which was on the first day of the tournament. Yeah, they have another rink that holds, I'd say, anywhere between maybe around 700 people. And what was remarkable is that that sheet was sold out for Arizona or San Jose and Arizona. I mean, that was really surprising to me and a pleasant surprise. But it's a gorgeous, gorgeous facility, and it's one that the Ducks will practice there on non-game days, from my understanding. There's Division I college hockey coming over, I think, in December. In 2020, they're holding a national curling tournament. It's just, and I think ultimately, Ryan, the University of Irvine, which is around the corner from the facility and a school that Ducks owner Henry Samueli has invested large sums of money in, I think they will go Division I within the next 3 to 4 years, and they will be another tenant in that facility.
Well, interesting. We saw what Terry Pegula did for Penn State hockey. Likewise, some boosters at ASU. They fast-tracked from club hockey to Division I in the last 5 years. So maybe another team on the west side of the Rockies. That would be interesting to see. Okay, let's move along to some other notes. Two-year deal for Jack Campbell. I really like what the Kings have in Campbell and, what was it, Cal Peterson, who had a pretty decent showing last year as youngsters, but there's still Jonathan Quick there. This seems to be the issue for a club that wants to get younger and is certainly in the midst of a rebuild.
Well, it's an interesting deal. I think, Jack Campbell was going to be an unrestricted free agent next season. And so you would think, maybe he'd want to put himself out on the open market. But what it does is that, Bill Ranford has resurrected the former number one draft pick's career somewhat. I mean, he had his best season ever last year in Los Angeles. What it does for Jack Campbell is it guarantees him a contract for 2 years. I think the other thing that it does from the LA Kings standpoint is that it makes him easier to move. Because I've been saying for, the past 8 or 9 months is that, look, come the expansion draft, Cal Peterson is going to be the number one goalie. My understanding is he's been promised that job in 2 years. And so, I think what LA is likely to do is now they can move Jack Campbell. He's got that security. And if you have to, you expose Jonathan Quick in the expansion draft. If someone takes him, so be it. But it just gives them a lot more flexibility, I think, for the LA Kings. And, look, if you're another team, let's say you're a team like Colorado, would you pick up, a guy like Jack Campbell just from the standpoint that, you're going to protect Philip Grubauer? Are you better off with Jack Campbell as the guy to protect or to not protect? I just think it opens up a lot of doors for LA, and I think it's a good deal for both sides. But to me, I just don't believe that by the time Seattle enters the league that Jack Campbell, there's a good chance. I just don't think he'll be in Los Angeles.
There's 4 years left on that deal at nearly $6 million a pop, and he at one point was certainly an elite netminder. You could argue the best in the sport for junctures. Where is he at 33, and where is the club's appetite to move him? Because I know we in our weekly chats over the last year and change, you've talked about him potentially moving, but I really wonder about the market for a 33-year-old with injury history and 4 years remaining.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And so that's why I think that, by signing Jack Campbell, it allows them to move Campbell and, let Quick be the guy that is the understudy or the tutor for Cal Peterson and nurtures this guy along. I mean, look, there's no mystery in Los Angeles. The belief amongst management is that they're 2 years away from being playoff relevant. So if that's the case, let Jonathan Quick teach Cal Peterson the ropes, when he comes to the NHL. If they can move Jonathan Quick and get something for him, then great. And then they keep Jack Campbell. But they've just put themselves, I believe, in a much better situation with their goaltending needs, because the idea and the feeling is from everyone I talk to is that Cal Peterson is the eventual number one goalie.
Interesting. Yeah, in 2 years, I mean, that's not a short amount of time. You did hang two banners if you're the Kings organization, so you've got a little leeway on that front. But usually the most optimistic views about timetables are held by the people in the organization. If they're thinking two, what are the pessimists saying about turning that around? They got a lot of money owed to guys on the wrong side of 30 all of a sudden.
They do, Ryan, but, you know, the one thing is that, when you, you know, if you take a look at what NHL.com and The Athletic, both, I think, had the Kings in their top five, you know, when you look at their prospects and when you look at their farm system. So, I you know, there is definitely promise along the way. You know, and I think, you know, look, a lot of it also depends upon, you know, what is Turcotte? Is he a number one center? Or some people have said to me they think he's more number two. The hope is that Gabe Vilardi, who has been dealing with a back injury and has not allowed him to, you know, to really play much hockey the last 2 years, the Kings are hopeful that he'll be able to play for their AHL team in Ontario this year. So, you know, if those, you know, if Vilardi can come back and be a factor, well, you know, look, they've got some promise down the middle because Anze Kopitar only has so many years left.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, let's be honest. They're going to have a real high pick this coming draft. That's how this season's going to go.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah,
that's
no,
good.
For them, that's exactly it. Let's stay down south. Vegas, what's the storyline for the Knights except trying to get over Game 7 against the Sharks? I feel like that would probably be the biggest item, and is there any other items beyond that? Get over that loss to San Jose. This is a good roster built to win now.
It is, and saying that, I think that their window is 2 years, Ryan. I think, you know, when you look, you know, at Marc-Andre Fleury, and, you know, where he is age wise, and then you look at a guy like Paul Stastny, who I think turns 35 this season, and Pacioretty's going to turn 32. You know, they're getting old. I mean, some of those key components, especially Fleury. You know, you have a short window, but right now, they're you know, when you look at their forwards, they're in a really good spot, and they're still fairly young on the back end. They still don't have that stud on the back end, but I really think that Vegas has got a 2-year window to really try to make something and to get themselves back to the final. Your thoughts on that?
No, look, I think you're absolutely right. Like, you're getting diminishing returns from Pacioretty, Stastny, Marchessault, you know, the numerous players that are around that 30, 31, you know, 28 to 32 age range, let's say. And certainly with a 34-year-old netminder, I mean, he could pull one of those outliers where he plays well into his 40s. He could also have the worst couple of years of his career and be done when his contract's done in 21-22. I mean, you're just at that age group. So I agree with you. I don't think this is what they were trying to build through the expansion draft, but this is what has happened when they were better early. They committed to older guys. They brought on guys in the second half of their prime, so to speak, like Stone, Pacioretty, Stastny. Like, this is it's now or never for the Golden Knights, you'd think, no?
Yeah, I agree. And because I think the biggest issue is that I'm not sure who's next in line to really be that legitimate number one goalie in Vegas. I don't know who that guy is right now. I don't believe it's Malcolm Subban. You know, sorry, but
yeah, and I don't think it's Garrett Sparks or Oscar Dansk or Dylan Ferguson. No respect to those guys that have also, you know, got contractual obligations to the club. You're right. So you probably go as well as Marc-Andre Fleury goes, and he's 34, 35. So here we are on borrowed time.
Yeah, and so, look, right now they're looking good. I mean, when you look at especially that forward group, I think it's as dangerous as anybody around the league. But, you know, they've got to find a way to get themselves back to a final like they did in year one. And, look, maybe for them that first-round exit will allow some of these guys, you know, it's a longer summer than players would like, but it's also, you know, it allows some bumps and bruises to heal. And they sure have motivation to push themselves forward this year after the way they exited last year.
Okay, let's stay in the desert from Vegas to Arizona. This is an interesting club. We've thought they were kind of knocking on the door the last 2 years. I think they've got about two starts from Antti Raanta the last 2 years combined. But they actually they were in the mix with a month to go for one of those wild cards in the West last year. And then they went out and added Phil Kessel. This is a group that I think is very much on the bubble in the West.
I would agree. And I think that, you know, when you look at the addition of Phil Kessel, at least on the surface, you know, it definitely, look, it gives them a guy who every time he steps on the ice has an opportunity to score. I think the one question in Arizona with Kessel is, and you know, if he ends up playing with Nick Schmaltz, you know, those are two guys that are really good on the offensive side of the puck, but can be really scary defensively. And so there's a lot of high risk and reward. And it'll be also interesting just to see, you know, how does Kessel produce not playing with either Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin. It's a big difference. But I think what, you know, for Phil, this fresh start and being in a, you know, in a market where, you know, while he may have, well, he may very likely take more of a focus with the media, it's still a very small media market. But he's a guy that they're going to lean on both on and off the ice. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles it. But I think it's a really good spot for him. You know, kind of similar to, you know, Jake Gardner being out of the Canadian spotlight in Carolina. I think Phil's going to really welcome the fact that, you know, he's playing in Arizona. And it also makes me to see, you know, the relationship between him and Rick Tocchet. I mean, it's well documented on how close they were when Rick was the assistant, but Phil, you know, understands that, you know, things can change when you're the head coach, and they've got a friendship, but, you know, he is the head coach, and he's no longer the bridge to the head coach. He is the guy. So it'll be interesting, but there's no, they should be more competitive and more game breakers. They're also going to be looking, I think, for more from Derek Stepan, who, you know, hasn't been what they had hoped for when he came over from New York.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. That's fair. And for Kessel, I mean, he scored everywhere. He scored in Toronto without guys. He scored in Pittsburgh with guys, but he's now 31. And you're right. I think if there's a guy that is built for a market with less limelight and more anonymity, it's Phil Kessel. We'll see what that means on the ice, but I think Phil absolutely is happier guy or more comfortable guy in greater Phoenix than he is, say, in Pittsburgh with all eyes on that franchise, or Toronto, the biggest fishbowl in the league, you could argue.
Yeah, and, you know, look, for a guy, you know, he's won his Stanley Cups, he can just go out and play hockey and not worry about, you know, that constant scrutiny.
Okay, let's go to Vancouver. The Vancouver Canucks have a significant RFA. They've pushed chips in on this season. They moved a conditional first-round pick for JT Miller. They need Brock Besser to get off to a good start, I would argue. They are now into the last 2 years of cheap Elias Pettersson, and they're 3 years away from what's probably going to be an expensive Quinn Hughes extension. The time is now in their mind with all the moves they've made this offseason. How's that negotiation going?
Well, I think it's tough. You know, they've got just under $5 million of cap space right now, and that's just not going to be enough, I don't think, to sign Brock Besser. So they've got to move a body. And, you know, while they're looking at both, you know, short and long-term deals, I just think, you know, ultimately, you know, the $6 million that they gave for both Edler and Tyler Myers have, you know, definitely played into the dollars that they can now spend on Brock Besser, and unless they can make another move. And then you look at other contracts like, you know, Antoine Roussel at $3 million and Jay Beagle at $3 million. You know, and while those guys, you know, there are things that, you know, both those guys can be very valuable off the ice, as well as they can do some things on the ice. But, man, I think that, you know, Jim Benning has kind of put himself in a bit of a bind. He's got a new three-year deal or three-year extension, but some of these contracts have really tied his hands, and I'm not sure how this Besser thing changes. I know he's skating right now at the University of North Dakota, where he went to college, so he's doing his best to continue to stay in shape, but I'm not sure what they do unless they can find a way to move somebody out or buy somebody out.
Yeah, and look, I think what's fascinating in Vancouver, I agree with you on Benning, like that's an expense on bottom half of the roster to spend that kind of money for guys near or at replacement level. Like it's not good. Yeah, there's no offense and a lot of money being spent on the bottom two lines. I think the worst place you can be in the NHL is – sorry, go ahead.
That's the one thing I want to add with that bottom six. You know, the numbers will tell you that their bottom six, I think, was the worst in the NHL from a standpoint of being outscored when they were on the ice.
Yeah. No, hey, look, I'm with you on that. And I think here's the thing that Canucks fans are probably well aware of. Being just close but missing the playoffs and capped out is so much worse than being dead last and picking first with cap space that to make moves. I mean, it really is purgatory if you're not good enough to get into the playoffs and you're capped out. That's kind of what we're looking at here with them having to move a body or put someone on LTIR or pull some cap magic to sign an important player. And again, they're not far away from having to spend some big money on the actual good young guys that they've got an entry level right now.
Yeah, so it'll be, you know, Edler's only, what, he only signed a 2-year deal. So, you know, that's all right. You know, that may not hurt them, but it's still the dollars involved. You know, short term, it definitely plays into Brock Besser.
Okay, well, good catching up. I'm sure you saw the news. Michael Stone re-ups with the Flames. Was the first reaction, is this legal? They bought him out just weeks ago, and now he's back for league minimum.
Yeah, you know, didn't the Capitals do that last year? Didn't they buy? Didn't they send Orpik or someone to Colorado, and then end up the Avs bought him out, and then didn't the Caps pick the guy back up? Does that sound familiar? I mean, the whole thing seems bizarre and sounds kind of fishy to me.
Yeah, from afar it would. Here's my thought on it. Like the Orpik one felt like cap circumvention, and that was the plan the whole way. Maybe it wasn't. The Flames one is simple. They couldn't afford an extra D-man that didn't crack their top six for $3.5 million. They need the cap space for Tkachuk, so he gets bought out. Then Valimaki goes down to injury, who they penciled into a significant role, and all of a sudden they need defensive depth where they didn't before. So I don't think this is cap circumvention so much as just a very unusual look and something that had everyone scrambling to, you know, message their favorite CBA expert.
Well, if it's legal, God bless him. And good for Stone for getting himself another contract.
Yeah, blood clot last year. So that's a chance for redemption this year, at least health-wise. Okay, great chatting. We'll do it again next week. Glad to see you've already got some preseason hockey under your belt. The big boys show up tomorrow. And, man, we're not far away from live bullets here on October 2nd when the season opens.
I can't wait. Always a pleasure, bud. Nice hearing your voice.
All right, likewise, there's Jonathan Davis from L.A.